I'd like now to welcome Lori Evans France. She's author of the new book, The Turquoise Trail, published by Arcadia Publishing. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
So this is a book in the Images of America series, which Arcadia Press puts out, and they hire people to do kind of photographic histories of certain perhaps lesser-known places all over the United States. How did you come to the Turquoise Trail as a subject?
Well, actually, they did. There's someone who works for them who traveled the Turquoise Trail as a tourist and thought that we should have a book on it. And they were trying to find an author, and I have been involved with a lot of people on the Turquoise Trail from a previous job. So they were trying to find someone to write the book. No one had time or wanted to do it, and I had the time and wanted to do it.
And so the Turquoise Trail we know as Route 14 that goes from Santa Fe to Albuquerque, or Albuquerque to Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tijeras. What was the origin of this road?
Well, it's also New Mexico 536, which goes up to Sandia Crest. There was a guy named Rex Burroughs who owned the Crest House at the top of Sandia Crest, and in the 50s he wanted to get more traffic there, so he sponsored a contest to name the route. And it was won by a woman, I believe her name is Ruth Armstrong, she lived in Corrales, she named it the Turquoise Trail. So it's been used as a moniker to get tourists more interested in the route, you know, based of course on the turquoise that's been mined there since, you know, for 1,000 years or more.
Well, that's an interesting point, which is that the mining happened long before the Spanish or any Europeans got here.
Right. The mining on the Turquoise Trail is the oldest known mine in the United States. Lead and turquoise were mined there. And it's also, Cerrillos is also the oldest mining district in the United States.
And Native Americans mined turquoise for its beauty, essentially, or for trade?
Uh-huh. We know that Native Americans from Santo Domingo and Cochiti mined there up into the 1800s, but it was traded all over the United States. And there was a vein, you've probably heard of Mount Chalchihuitl. There was a vein that opened onto the ground at Mount Chalchihuitl. So they were mining the turquoise just right there on the ground.
And so the road has only been called the Turquoise Trail for a relatively short time, but it's been a road for much longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
How did it get there?
Well, you know, I don't know. I know that the route number before 14 was New Mexico 10, but then when they developed Interstate 10 in the southern part of the state, they changed it to New Mexico 14. But frankly, I don't really know the history of it before it was New Mexico Route 10. I do know it wasn't even paved until into the 60s, because it was a back route. But I really don't know the origin of it before the... I'm sure it's based on old trails. There were plenty of people there. The Spanish were first there in 1581 and knew about minerals in the area that early.
And, of course, it does connect mining towns like, like Madrid.
Uh-huh.
With all of its neighbors. Madrid is a really interesting case of a mining town, as you talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
How did Madrid begin?
Well, it started out, there's a huge bed of coal there, and it's both anthracite and bituminous coal, which is very unusual to have hard and soft coal in the same place. So wildcatters were mining coal there from the early 1800s, and at a certain point, the... ATNSF put a spur to Cerrillos.
Action Topeka and Santa Fe Railroad.
Right, yeah. Put a spur from the route from Albuquerque to Santa Fe. They did a spur to Cerrillos, and eventually a spur went to Madrid, too. Madrid was originally called Coal Gulch, and at a certain point, all the coal production in the area was centralized there at Madrid.
And Madrid was a place where... they wanted, I mean, I guess these mining towns were pretty rough, but you write that they wanted to make Madrid a kind of more civilized and family town.
Yeah. The ATNSF owned the town and the mining rights, and they sold them eventually to George Caseman, who owned the Albuquerque and Cerrillos Coal Company. And he hired Oscar Huber to be a superintendent. He was having a little trouble in Madrid. And when Caseman was killed prematurely in an oil well explosion... Oscar Huber bought everything from his widow, Anna. And Oscar Huber just had these ideas for Madrid from early on his time there. He didn't want it to be the usual rough, male-oriented mining town. And they had an employees organization that all the miners contributed to. And that generated, with the funds generated through that, they had all these celebrations for 4th of July, Easter. Christmas was the most well-known and the most popular. And they did a lot of things. Besides which, the company paid for electricity to all the homes. There were medical facilities, schools. It was just a very family-oriented place, and that's what Oscar Huber always wanted for the town.
Oscar Huber kind of plays an ongoing role throughout your book. Who was he?
He lived in Albuquerque, and he was hired by George Caseman, like I said, to be the superintendent. He started out as Caseman's secretary, and he ended up being his superintendent because he was so good at dealing with the problems in the town. And when he bought the mines, he lived there himself with his family, and he lived there until 54 when he moved to Albuquerque when he tried to sell the everything. But he was very involved in everything. His own family grew up there. His kids went to school there. So he was very much part of the community himself.
We're talking about the book, The Turquoise Trail, and it is full of amazing old photographs. There's some that I just love. Like, one of them is a picture of an establishment, and it says, "Dancing, gambling." And you look at this, and you can just, like, imagine the raucous times that were held inside that building.
Yeah.
But how did you collect all of these pictures?
Well, this series, the photos are supposed to be historic, so they're supposed to be 50 years old or older. So for me, that was, I have some pictures into the 60s. I got them mostly from several different people. I got quite a few from the UNM Center for Southwest Research, but I really got most of them from a few people. Melinda Bonnewell, who owns Cowgirl Red and the Mining Museum with a partner in Madrid, she gave me over 600 articles and images, and they're almost all from Oscar Huber's daughter, Mary Huber Duncan, who's still alive in Albuquerque. So that helped me a huge amount. And my photos of Cerrillos mostly came from Pat Brown, who owns the Cerrillos Trading Post with her husband Todd, and Bill Baxter, who's a local historian, really knows the history of the area. And then Bill Henderson, if you're familiar with the store in Golden, he owns the Golden, it's called the Henderson Store, but a lot of people call it the Golden Store. And he gave me a lot of photos, all the ones of Golden, and he was raised in Madrid and has lived in Golden since before it was a town. So those people are where I got most of the images and who gave me an awful lot of the history.
And it feels like there's some cultural photographs in it. I love the fact that Madrid has always been a Christmas lights town with mm-hmm. fantastic Christmas displays, and there's some mm-hmm. Fiestas and festivals. But it's in a lot of ways very much about the kind of history of the industrial West, mm-hmm. mining, automobiles, buildings, schools, infrastructure, all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mining is definitely the thread that runs through this book. The towns that are left, Golden, Madrid, and Cerrillos, and then there are towns in the East Mountains that weren't so much involved in mining, but that's what ties those three towns together.
As you did the research and looked at all these pictures and then went to the real places, are a lot of the buildings still standing? Do these towns have the same feel as they did 50, 100 years ago?
Yeah. You know, Madrid is, those are all the original miners' homes and businesses. I can't think of a single new thing in Madrid. Same with Cerrillos. I mean, there probably are new houses in Cerrillos, but yeah, they really feel like they did. Golden, the original church still stands there. The Golden Store has been there since that building's been there since 1800s. They just added on to it. So yeah, these buildings are old for New Mexico.
Right, right. And in Madrid, the owners of Madrid actually tried to put the whole entire town on the market.
He did. Oscar Huber closed the mines in 1954 because there was no demand for coal anymore, and also World War II really cut the male population down a lot. So Oscar Huber sold the equipment he could before he tried to sell the whole town, and then he put an ad in the Wall Street Journal on June 17, 1954, offering 200 houses, grade and high school, powerhouse, general store, tavern, machine shop, mineral rights, 9,000 acres, excellent climate, fine industrial location for $250,000, and no one bought it.
Amazing. And so what happened to the town after that?
Well, when he died, he left it in his will to his son, Joe. And Joe didn't have much luck selling it either. He advertised it also, and the only person interested was Billy Saul Estes. I don't know if you remember him, but he was a politically connected guy nationally who got imprisoned for fraud. So that fell through. And he subdivided the town, and he started selling individual lots and buildings. And he sold one for $10. In 1975, he finally put everything up for sale and just sold them one at a time.
And that was how it became the Madrid that it is today.
Yeah, and I remember when I moved to so he was selling them for $1,000 and $2,000 apiece, depending on what the building was. But when I moved here, I remember that they were, so that was the mid-80s. I remember that you could buy something there for about $6,000. And now I think it's hundred thousands of dollars. I'm not sure what they go for now, but, you know, they were falling apart.
Right.
They took a lot of work.
Now, the Turquoise Trail also has connections to New Mexico's film industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, thousands of films have been, I'm sure you probably interview people about that all the time. Thousands of films have been filmed in New Mexico, but that's kind
and
of...
And it's not just Breaking Bad.
Yeah, right. Right. That's kind of one I say in the book, that's a way that Turquoise Trail kind of invented itself. A lot of films have been filmed on the Turquoise Trail. But some of the earlier things were, there's a connection that a lot of people may not know between Walt Disney and the Turquoise Trail, and that is that Walt Disney's employee, Walter Lantz, who created Woody Woodpecker, had a brother named Paul Lantz who worked in Madrid, and they came and visited Paul at Christmas time, and he saw the Christmas lights, the whole, you know, they were doing a huge elaborate thing for Christmas. And by that time, they had Toyland, which was a thing for the kids with an actual running miniature train in the ballpark. And it had little, like life-size cutouts of fairy tales. There was a whole thing for the kids. There was a doll's Ferris wheel. And if you look, Melinda Bonnewell, who owns Cowgirl Red and gave me a lot of information for the book, has a picture of Toyland and Disneyland. And they really believe that Walt Disney got the idea for Disneyland from Toyland. And really, if you see, her two pictures are side by side in the mining museum exhibits. And if you see the pictures, there's a really good case for that.
Amazing.
Being the truth. But then also, I guess he liked the area. He filmed The Nine Lives of El Fago Baca in Cerrillos, which was a movie and a TV series.
We're talking to Lori Frantz about her book, The Turquoise Trail. So it must have been fun for you to put this all together. Your last book was called Scenic Byways of New Mexico?
It was, by the way, New Mexico's 25 Scenic Byways.
And that involved a whole lot of running around the state. Mm-hmm. This one, too, or was it more kind of like the historic perspective on the Turquoise Trail?
No, it didn't involve near as much running around. It was really getting the photos, which is kind of hard because a lot of people donate their photos to the photo archives and museums and research centers and stuff. And once they get there, it's expensive to use them. So you really have to find people who have photos still. And they have to be...
That's ironic.
Yeah. So I used the Center for Southwest Research, and their fees were low. So, but it's fun to me for one thing. This book has photos that you're not going to see unless you know someone like that or you go to the Center for Southwest Research, and most people aren't going to do that. So this really gets these photos out where people can see them, and I like that idea. I like that about Arcadia.
And if you like old cars, there's a bunch of them in this book for you.
Oh, can I tell you a story about that?
Yeah.
Oscar Huber started a dealership and a gas station in Madrid, and the miners could buy cars on credit. So almost everyone in Madrid had a car. So Madrid also had a baseball team, the Madrid Miners, and they were really popular. And you know the ballpark is at the north end of town. So everyone would drive their cars down to the ballpark to watch the games, and they'd sit in their cars to watch them. And when the Miners won or scored, they'd honk their horns. So, but it's pretty funny. You'll see a couple pictures in here where the ballpark is just surrounded by cars, and it's because they could buy them because they could buy them on credit. And Madrid at one time had more cars per capita than anywhere in the country.
Amazing.
Madrid. Little Madrid.
Inspiration for Disneyland, most cars in the country. New Mexico is just continually full of weird surprises.
It is. Best, worst, most, least.
Right.
We have all that kind of stuff.
Lori Evans-Frantz is author of the book The Turquoise Trail. It's part of the Images of America series from Arcadia Publishing. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.